Not a game. We talking about practice.
Now it's time for the takeover.
Buckle up for Kobe. Kobe Bryant just sucked the gravity out of the Target Center.
Not the game. We talking about practice, man.
That's a stretch three. Dodgers have won it all in 2020. Oh, what a shot from Curry. Diggs, sideline, touchdown.
The return to glory.
Now it's time for the takeover.
Well, Dak, here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence. You ain't first, you're last.
All right, folks, it is episode 167 of the Takeover Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Siekert, and it is another beautiful day to talk Bronco football with a very special guest. But before we get to the special guest, I just want to reiterate, if you are new here and you are watching us right now, hit us with a like and subscribe. That would really mean a lot. Allows us to keep going. And it would really mean the world to me. So appreciate your support. If you already have been subscribed and given us likes, big shout out to you. I also know who you are. So thank you. But hey, this episode's not about me, obviously. We have a very special guest. I'm sure you have read the title of the video. So please join me in welcoming the Boise State's all-time touchdown receiving leader, Austin Pettis.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, Austin, AP. Hey, coach. Well, man, let's go all the way back. Orange Lutheran High School, you were first team all county, first team all league. So you probably knew you were going to go D1. But what was the dream school for Austin Pettis to play college football at?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. Played on a really good high school team. I think we lost like three games in my career in high school, and we play in the toughest league in United States, in the Trinity League with Mater Dei and Bosco, Servite, Santa Margarita, and J. Sarah, and Orange Lutheran, obviously, where I played at. But I didn't actually get offered until my senior year in the playoffs because I didn't play my junior year. Any sport. I missed every sport for all four. I played basketball, baseball, football, and track, and I missed all those because I had some screws put in my knee the week before the season started for football. So I didn't get really recruited until my senior year in the playoffs, and Boise was a lead front runner in that. They were one of the first offers I had. I only had three, Utah State, and Boise initially. As I went through my senior year, really wanted to go to USC, to be honest, being a Southern California guy, and four of my teammates actually committed to SC. So obviously I wanted to go there with my teammates, but they pretty much said I wasn't good enough. And also UCLA hometown team said I wasn't good enough as well. So I took a trip to Boise during the Fiesta Bowl when they played Oklahoma. During that bowl trip, when they were still practicing out in the dome in Boise. And that was my official visit weekend. And I actually committed that weekend off of seeing the vibes and how the community supported the program. And me and my mom were out there, and she pretty much gave me that look like, you're going here. And I felt the same way, too. So it worked out perfect.
Oh, let's go. Okay. So, yeah. And hey, moms know. Moms definitely
for sure,
know.
For sure. Can't go against that.
Hey, no way. And so what's also crazy, and I took a look at that freshman class that came in with you, all those names, looking back, I'm like, that might be probably maybe the best freshman class Boise State has ever seen. Do you remember all the names?
I would say it's absolutely the best freshman class in Boise State alone. It was one of the top in the country. I know we were like super low in terms of the star rankings for our recruiting class, but by the time everybody left, I know we were in the top 10. Because you had Doug Martin, Shea McClellan, Billy Wynn, you even had DJ Harper, right? Obviously, Kellen, Titus, me, Tyler Shoemaker, Charles Leno. I think there was about 11 or 12 guys who ended up having some form of NFL experience, all from one incoming class from Boise State.
You forgot Brandon Thompson.
Oh, BT, that's my dog. Yep.
So, yeah, that's just That's hard to beat. That I don't know if that'll ever be beat.
No, I hope it gets beat, but it's going to be hard to, for sure.
Facts. And so you end up going to Boise State, right? You you play your first freshman year, little six touchdowns, about 400, 500 receiving yards. Like, all right. Like, so the transition from high school to college, was it a pretty big transition, or how did you kind of feel your freshman year playing?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a big transition for me, especially because I didn't play football till I got to high school. So I played freshman ball my freshman year. My sophomore year, I played on varsity a good amount. And then my junior year, obviously, like I said, I didn't play at all. So really all I had was my senior year of getting a real football experience being a featured guy. And with that being said, we ran the triple option offense too. And I'm a receiver, so it's probably not the best offense you would want to be a receiver in. But fortunately, I had really good coaching, and they still figured out ways to get me the ball. And I had a pretty good senior year. I think I had about 75 catches for 1,100 yards and 14 touchdowns. And we had 3,000-yard rushers because we ran the ball all the time. So I was still able to get the rock a little bit. So that was cool. But I learned a lot, and we won a lot of ball games, and that was a big reason my head coach, Coach Kunau, was really close with Coach Peterson in terms of the recruiting process. And my head coach from high school stood on the table for me with Coach Pete, and that really helped my recruiting process in going to Boise, because obviously I didn't have a ton of film to show that I could, you know, compete at the next level. But with my senior year, they still stayed on me with Coach Pease, Coach K, and Coach Pete, and in the recruiting process, they were the ones that showed me the most love. So obviously, you know, you can only pick one school, so it doesn't matter how many offers you have, you go to the place that loves you the most, and Boise loved me the most, so it ended up working out perfect for me.
Love that. So in college, your sophomore year rolls around, and Chris Peterson's like, all right, well, we need a new quarterback, and this redshirt freshman that throws the ball left-handed, Kellen Moore, was named the starting quarterback for you guys. And I was just curious, Austin, like, was there ever a specific, like, practice, game, or even a moment when you thought, man, this guy Kellen's different?
Yeah, I will actually say this is probably not, hopefully this is not a bad word, but it's probably not the sexiest story, but I knew how good Kellen was because I'm a pretty cerebral player, if that makes sense. Like, I love the minute details of the game, and Kellen is that times 10. So in practice, it was almost, for some of our guys as receivers, it's like, he's never thrown us the ball, he's just gonna hit the check down because he makes the right read every single time. And you know, receivers just want the ball, and it was like, I don't care if they're guarding me, like, just throw it anyways. But Kellen would always make the right read, so it was almost like a joke, like, you know, you're not getting the ball when Kellen's in, like, because he just reads the defense so well. And that was his freshman year, redshirt year. But then when he got named a starter, then he started to open up a little bit more. He got, obviously, camaraderie with me and Titus and Shu, and then our tight ends as well, and obviously our running backs. And then he started to let the ball go a little bit more. And then that's when you kind of saw, like, if you got a quarterback who understands the game, but then he also has a trust in his receivers, but he can play and manage both of those, which helps you win ball games, because you can't just – I'm just going to throw the ball to my guy. I don't care if they're guarded triple team, double team. Like, no, you actually got to throw the check down sometimes, you know, like, and Kellen absolutely would just make the right decision all the time. So I think it was a progression in watching him through practices where we knew that, like, yeah, this guy's going to be a problem for defenses because he's going to take what they give you. But then he also has trust in his athletes out there. Like, hey, if it's a 50-50 ball, I'm counting on my guy, and he'll give you a chance to go make that play. So I think he had a great balance of that, and I think that's what made him so good.
That's incredible. And I feel like I kind of speak for Bronco Nation here. Like, from the outside, Kellen just always kind of seems so, like, even-keeled, calm. Was he the same way, like, behind the scenes? Or, like, what made him, like, such an elite player and leader? Like, what was it about him?
Yeah, I think the best way to put it is it's almost like you're playing video games against your younger sibling or something, right? Like, like, your knowledge. Like, Kellen just knew, I'm so much smarter than everybody else out here, and that's just how he conducted himself, not in a cocky way, but in a confident way. And when you have your shooter, in the huddle, and you can see his quiet, calm confidence all the time. It kind of empowers everybody else to just know that, like, we don't have to worry about him. Like, he's just making sure that you guys do your right job because he knows he's going to do his job. And that gave us a quiet confidence in terms of us going out there and executing whatever was called, because he didn't talk the most trash at all, but he was, he was a humbly confident quarterback, and you felt his presence. He didn't have to yell. He didn't have to scream. He didn't have to cuss the defense out or anything like that. Just he went out there and was like, yeah, I know what you guys are doing. I know who I'm getting the ball to, and we're going to go get this first down. Let's go hike. And that empowered us all as well to just know that, like, you don't have to worry about your quarterback. Like, he's going to be on the same page with you. And I will give him the most credit in my playing experience. I've never been around a player that was more on the same page with his skill positions than Kellen Moore. And that's on every level that I played at. He knew where you were supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. And he got you the ball at that time. And he understood how certain guys would get to their spots, and the ball would just be right between your nose whenever you got to the right spot at the right time. And he just knew how to find that rhythm with all of his athletes around him. And I think that was his biggest attribute. Again, he didn't throw the ball 75 yards. He didn't throw it 100 miles an hour, but the ball was there when it was supposed to be there. And he had a great feel for his guys out there and the camaraderie of just having timing with certain players.
How is he not in the College Football Hall of Fame?
I mean, that's a disgrace, in my opinion. I don't know if you can name many quarterbacks that had a better career than him, let alone players, to be honest. Not even the quarterback position, but even player-wise. But, yeah, Kellen, I would say he's got to be top five ever to touch a football in college, especially for what he did at his size and his great athletic ability that he was God. to be able to do the things that he did, that just tells you how great of a football mind he had.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Like, who are these guys in front of Kellen Moore that are, like, getting in? And I'm sorry, he's got the most wins ever. What else does he need?
Yeah, I'll sign that petition to get him in there ASAP for sure. We can start it.
Okay, let's do it. And I'm sure, hey, it won't take long.
No, for sure. It might take a month, and we're in there.
But your former head coach did make the College Football Hall of Fame, Chris Peterson, the legend himself. What was it like playing under Coach Pete, and why was he such a successful head coach, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Coach Pete, like I was mentioning earlier, was very similar to my head coach in high school that I played with in terms of their philosophies, that it's much bigger than football and X's and O's, and it was much more about growing young men. And I think when you are around someone that you feel has more skin in the game for you, not only as an athlete but actually as a person, then you follow suit to whatever he says. And I think that Coach Pete did a great job of showing his true appreciation and respecting us not only as athletes, but as young men, and helping build and guide us. And I think we all know, if you're in the sports world, your coaches are more father figures to you. You're around them more than you would be your own father. I mean, to be honest, right? In terms of the amount of hours that you put in and the influence that they have on you. So I think Coach Pete did a great job of that. And even for me, I went through growing pains with Coach Pete. I got called in the office a good amount of times because I'm a little bit of a hothead, and I have a little bit of attitude here and there with certain things. But I think Coach Pete was the most perfect coach for me to as I'm going through, you know, those 18, 19, 20, 21 year old years of figuring life out, not just football, but he was able to keep us level headed and help us to understand that the game of football is much bigger than just in between the lines. And it's a lot of life lessons that you grow through and that you build from those experiences. And I think that his perspective was translated to us as a whole team. And I definitely took that to heart. And he's one of the reasons why I'm a coach now as well, because I want to give that same knowledge that he gave to me. And I saw how much it benefited my life. So I want to be that for somebody else as well.
Man, I love that. And are you still staying in touch with him? Or like, hey, like, coach, can I pick your brain on also being a coach? Or are you still hitting him up at all?
Yeah, no, I haven't talked to him in years, actually. I've just been a fan from afar. I'm in contact with some of our guys that we play with. We actually have a group chat as well from some of our incoming class and some of our older guys, too, like Jerron and J-Rob, some of those guys who are a year ahead of us with our incoming class that we, me and Kellen and BT and Titus and all of us and Doug that we came in with. But we kind of have a little group chat together that we still talk. And then a lot of the guys are in coaching or into training and stuff like that. So we keep in contact and kind of still pick each other's brains here and there and make sure that everyone's on the same page and seeing where they're at right now in their football world, because it's kind of hard to leave this world when you played in it for so long. So a lot of the guys are still involved in some form.
That's great. And, you know, speaking of former teammates, and I think I also speak for all of Bronco Nation when I say you and Titus Young were probably the best wide receiver duo in Boise State history. So I got to ask, what was it like sharing the field with Titus, and what made your synergy and your connection just damn near unstoppable?
Yeah, I will stand on the table and say we are probably arguably one of the best duos ever in terms of production. And again, I know we weren't at Ohio State or SC or Oklahoma and all that, but we were still top five in the country for 2 years straight. So it wasn't like we were slouches, like just stats and going and beating up on, you know, teams that maybe weren't as good as us. We played whoever we were able to play, and we played the highest level and we're successful with that. But yeah, I mean, that experience, really helped me in my football life, because it helped as a receiver. Let's be honest, receivers are divas. You know, you want, I'm open every single play. I should have 15 catches a game. Like, that's how receivers feel. But being able to share the field with a guy like Titus, I mean, in my opinion, Titus is one of the best receivers I've ever seen in my life with my own two eyes. And I've been around a lot of football. That guy could play ball. And he was just naturally God gifted. And he did stuff that, even when I train and coach kids right now, and I want them to make a certain type of cut or something like that, I'm like, yeah, Titus could have made that, but you can't. Like, God gave Titus that ability right there. So being able to share the field with him was great. And then, I mean, with that being said, in terms of like the accolades that we were able to achieve together, in terms of like the records for Boise State history, that was very much earned. And I think it's even more earned in terms of we actually shared the field the whole entire time, and add in Tyler Shoemaker. All three of us, we played together and ended as the top receivers in Boise State history. It wasn't like I played by myself. If I didn't have Titus, I would have had 50 more catches, right? If I didn't have Shoe, I'd have 50 more catches, right? But we all shared the field together and still ended as top players in the history of Boise State. So I think that's a testament to just the sacrifices that we were able to make, because we wanted to win ball games. The stats didn't matter. It was, did we get a W or not? And then how football works, fortunately, if you do the right thing more times than not, you're going to be rewarded with the stats on the other end. And I think that's what happened with all of us, especially having running backs like Doug and DJ as well, and even Peanut. You know, like all those guys, they got their stats too, but we all did that at the same time. So I think that was a testament to just Coach Pete and us understanding, like, it's about winning football and whatever we can do to win. Some games I have three catches, some games I have 12 catches. But did we get a W? And that was the most important thing.
Absolutely. Were you and Titus close off the field? Do you guys hang out a bunch?
Yeah, we were close, actually. Yeah, I mean, I guess inside, I haven't really talked about this a lot, but funny inside story is, like, I was kind of Titus's go-to, if that makes sense, in terms of if Titus was having a good day, if he was having a bad day, I was a little bit more of the guy he would listen to. So I love Titus. I mean, he's one of my favorite people ever. We were really close in college in terms of, like, being able to just have communication with each other. Because, you know, there's a lot of personalities in a locker room. But fortunately for me, for whatever reason, me and Titus clicked pretty well. And I was able to kind of relay messages that maybe the coaches would want to relay. But, you know, a lot of times as athletes, you don't hear your coaches all the time, because it kind of gets, you know, a little bit annoying here and there if you hear the coaches yelling at you all the time saying the same stuff. But me and him were able to communicate with each other, and he would let me know stuff, I would let him know stuff, and you kind of hear from a different voice, and you kind of are able to translate that for your own personal self mentally. And I think that me and Titus had that relationship where we were able to talk more candid, and if I saw he was off, I'd let him know. And if he saw I was off that day, he would let me know, like, no, come on. Like, we're killers out here. Like, let's go. Like, we don't got time for all this. So I think we had a great synergy in terms of that, of we were very big competitors. So we wanted to win in everything. And I think we drove each other. And I think it kind of showed in our play that, shoot, if Titus scored, like, I'm the next drive, I'm like, shoot, come on, it's my turn, let's go. You know, and that's kind of how we did. But it was for the benefit of the team, though. But it was just, you know, friendly competition, because we knew we wanted to win ball games, but we wanted to have a hand in us helping win the ball games as well.
Absolutely. Everyone's got to eat.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I did a good job of that.
Austin, what was your favorite moment at Boise State, and why was it the blocked punt against Virginia Tech?
Yes, it was definitely the blocked punt. One, because there was a lot that went into that game. And again, I'll make a long story short. Coach Pete instilled us a lot of character traits, and our bus broke down on the way to that game. One, it was supposed to be a neutral site, and we're playing Virginia in Washington, D.C., and that's our neutral site at FedEx Stadium with 90,000 fans, and 80,000 are them. So I don't know how neutral that really was.
Right.
But the bus broke down. I stood in front of the bus, and probably a lot of people don't know this story. I stood in front of the bus, and I stood up while we were waiting on some other bus to come pick us up. We had to pile in as a whole team in one bus. I told them, is this all they got for us, is having our bus break down? They think this is going to break us. And that was the mentality that we had going into that game. And I promised Coach Choate, I love Coach Choate to death, one of my favorite coaches ever. He was a special teams coordinator. And I said, Coach Choate, I'm blocking the first punt of the game. I was like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to block the first punt of the game. And sure enough, they messed up on defense, or on their punt protection and whatever. I don't care. But I blocked the first punt of the game, and I told them that was going to happen. I think we just spoke it into existence. And I think from then on, our team had that confidence of, like, we belong here. Like, there might be 80,000 fans here for them, and we're on a neutral site all the way on the East Coast in their hometown, but we're here to play ball. And I think that kind of sparked us as a team. I know the game went back and forth, but that was one of my most fulfilling moments of, it wasn't me scoring a touchdown or making a big third down catch or anything. It was me, like, hey, I'm for the team. I'm trying to make a play for us. I'll go out on punt block, and I'm going to go make a play and block the punt. And I think that kind of changed the direction of the game. And we had a lot of confidence as we went through with that game to get the W in the end, obviously.
That's an incredible story. I love that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I know that bus is going to work on the way back home. Promise you that.
Oh, yeah. No, they had it working for us.
Let's go. And so for offensive side of the ball, out of all the 39 touchdowns, Mr. Record Holder, which one was your favorite?
Ooh, that's a tough one. All right, so I'm going to give you two. My favorite was Wyoming, and we threw we handed it off to DJ. He pitched it back to Kellen, and Kellen threw me a deep ball for a post. I caught it, and I did a front flip in the end zone. One of my favorite plays, I have pictures in my house of it and everything, and Coach Pete benched me for the rest of the game for doing that. I had three catches for 85 yards and one touchdown 5 minutes into the game, and I didn't play the rest of the game. So
worth it.
I would say nowadays, I'll say it was worth it, yes.
Yeah.
And my other one is obviously, the game winner versus Virginia Tech in the back of the end zone. Again, like I was saying about Kellen giving him his flowers, we'd never seen a coverage like that on that play that we ran. I probably scored at least 10, 15 touchdowns around that on that play in my career. And we seen the coverage that we'd never seen before. And for whatever reason, Kellen's that cerebral, and we were on the same page. And I just knew I just had to win to the back of the end zone, and he knew just throw it to the back of the end zone based on the coverage they were giving us, and we were on the same page on that. So I think that was another big moment of, like, that's how good Kellen is, that we can run that play for 4 years, and one of the biggest moments in the world, we don't get any look we've ever got, and we're still on the same page. to have a game winner with less than a minute left. So I think that just is a testament to Kellen, and that's why I think that play is so special, because it wasn't about me, honestly. It was about how good the other guys were and what they were doing, and we were all on the same page because we rep stuff so much that we just knew where each other were going to be at with feel, because we put that work in.
Absolutely. And gosh, what an absolute dot from Kellen. Just right between your numbers, dude. Or just, yeah, right on that two. Right on the number two. Just okay. Okay, lefty.
I had no decision to catch that or not. I better caught that or I would walk home.
Yeah. Yeah, you're fixing every bus that comes through that shit now. Yeah. Austin, I wanted to take a moment to remember Doug Martin, your former teammate. You know, when you think back on your time together, what stands out most about who he was as a teammate, and why do you think he was so special both on and off the field?
Yes, obviously. I mean, rest in peace. Great human being. I would say that more than a football player, great human being. And I'm sure a lot of people don't know, but Doug came in and six of us in that incoming class played as true freshmen. And Doug was on kind of the bubble, and he actually didn't play as a true. DJ Harper kind of beat him out in terms of understanding the offense and the nuances of it. It wasn't about who can run the ball better. It was just more about the concepts of the offensive scheme that we were running with Harse. And DJ caught into that a little bit quicker. So he was the one who played as the true. And Doug redshirted it. Doug actually got moved to defense. And Doug was playing defense for a year. And I know probably a lot of people don't know that. So he was playing defense for a year. And don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure DJ got a little banged up in the offseason one of our years, and they moved Doug back to running back. And then he pretty much stayed there. And then we saw that we got a two-headed monster in DJ and Doug. And Doug was the guy that we'd have 5:45 a.m. workouts. And gosh, he'd be up till 3 o'clock, eat a whole pizza to himself and drink a 2-liter and be the first person in there and the first person finishing every drill. I'm like, where is this guy made from? Like, he's an alien or something. Like, it didn't make any sense. Like, there's no way. Like, we wake up at 5 in the morning, like, I'm pissed off already. And he's in there bouncing around, ready to just get his work in. So I think that was his greatest attribute, though, was he loved the game. Like, he wanted to just play football. And it didn't matter where you put him at. Like I said, he got moved to defense. He was like, shoot, I'll start at nickel. Like, so he was repping at nickel, like playing defense and figuring it out. And I think that's a testament to, obviously, too, the recruiting process that the coaches and Coach Pete and all them had of bringing in the right people, because there wasn't no egos. And I think, obviously, in the long run, it pays off. You get a first-round running back out of a guy who had no ego that got moved to defense, you know, right? And he goes first round. So I think that was something really cool about Doug, that he just wanted to play ball. He didn't care about logistics of everything here and there, like just hike the ball, let's go play. And I think that was something that was infectious to the rest of us as well, too. Like, you just wanted to go hard because you see guys around you doing the same thing. And again, there is no ego out there. It's just like, how can I help this team win a ball game? And he was all for that.
Mm, amen. Gone too soon, man. Rest in peace.
For sure.
So you had a successful collegiate career, Austin. So you enter the draft, St. Louis Rams in the third round give you a phone call. What was draft day like, my man?
That was a fun day. Actually, it was at Pelican Hill, a really nice golf course down here in Southern California. Rented a nice a hotel room. All my family was there, all my family and friends. We were all there together, and got the call from St. Louis. I'm not gonna lie, I never been out that direction, don't even know where it was at. They're right when I got off the phone, they called me right back. They're like, hey, you got a flight in 2 hours. I was like, wait, what's going on? And like, yep. So I had to leave my own draft party, I had to kiss and hug everyone goodbye, go home, pack my bag, packed my suit, and got on a flight right that night, and everyone else got to celebrate while I was gone. But it was fun to be around my family, and I mean, there's no other feeling than hearing your name called, especially, you know, when I was a young kid, my dream was to become a professional athlete. Like, when they ask you, what do you want to do when you grow up? I just wrote pro athlete. So I didn't know what sport it was going to be, but I just knew I was going to be a pro. So getting my name called and having those dreams from, 5 years, 6 years old in kindergarten, writing that on my paper to it actually happening on the TV in front of my family was definitely something very special. And I got to share with all of them too as well. So it was really cool.
Now, we talked about the transition from high school to college football. Now, the transition from college to the NFL, talent-wise, there's just levels to it, huh?
Yeah, it is. And I actually, in my opinion, I was very happy, and I looked forward to that transition because I knew that when you're in the less than 1%, it's not about your abilities no more, because you don't make it to the less than 1% if you don't have ability. I was fortunate again to be around good coaches that let me know that the game is a lot more than just the physical aspects that you bring to it. It's a lot more mental. So I took that to heart. And so going into the league, I felt like I had an advantage over a lot of people because I wasn't coming in to tell them or show them that, like, hey, I run 4.2 or I'm 6'5", 230. Like, just give me the ball. Like, no, it was, I understand the offense. I understand what the quarterback's thinking. I understand that the O-line's supposed to slide this way when the defense does this. I understand that the running back's supposed to check swing on this play, or he's supposed to stay in off this. But, I was very cerebral. So I was just very, very in tune to the mental aspect of it, to give myself an upper hand. And I played a little bit earlier. I wasn't drafted, I guess you would say, into the best situation, and how the NFL works, right? It's situations and opportunities. And unfortunately, I got drafted to a team that wasn't as good the year before. And it was a whole new coaching staff the year that I got there. And Coach McDaniels was the OC. Obviously, it was Brady's OC for the Patriots for all the Super Bowls and all that. So coming in, and it was lockout year. So that was difficult because we didn't have time to get out there and actually get introduced to the NFL and learn offense and everything. We actually just got introduced 2 weeks already into camp, and it was like, hey, you guys are going to play in 2 weeks. It's preseason already. So I didn't get the easiest transition in there. And then after my rookie year, all the coaches got fired and a new staff came in. They drafted a lot of receivers. My second year and my third year, they drafted 4 receivers in the top 3 rounds, and Tavon Austin and Stedman Bailey, Brian Quick and Chris Givens. I was one of the only, I think there were 7 people they kept on the team, after my rookie year. And when Coach Fisher came in, he brought in pretty much all new players. It was definitely a welcome to the business of football. And then I got more comfortable in the system and with Coach Shoddy, who's with Dallas now, and with the offense, I was doing pretty well my third year. And me and Antonio Brown were actually leading the league in touchdowns through, I think, 5 weeks or 6 weeks. And then, unfortunately, the business of football, I kind of got sat down a little bit because they had drafted a bunch of guys in the last 2 years, and they needed them to play more. And I was doing a little bit too well, I think, for them to be drafting guys. So I kind of got benched, everything happens for a reason. So I'm not salty or bitter about it at all, because it got me into coaching now and helping young kids out. But that's kind of the direction that my path went, and I didn't have the best attitude by, kind of getting benched when I thought I was doing really well. And then eventually end up getting cut at a certain point too. So kind of was just a downhill effect when that happened. But it's the business of football. And now that I know that, I get to give knowledge back to kids to just keep your head down, keep working your butt off, and whatever happens, happens, and just trust God's got a plan for you.
Amen. But man, that is, the NFL is ruthless. I mean, they sure benched you because you were doing too good. And like, they were paying other players a little too much money to not be that good.
Yeah, man. I love all those guys too. Like, I had those guys come hang out with me in the offseason, helped them train, all that stuff. Those are my guys to this day for sure. Like, if anybody hit me up, like, it's all good. It's all love. But unfortunately, like, there is a business to this game, and I respect it, because now I'm removed from the league, so I can see from an outside perspective looking in, and hey, they got to run it like a business. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And so in your NFL career, you went up against even some Hall of Fame players on defense, and one of them You went up against Ray Lewis in that defense, man. Are they as scary as advertised?
100%. Yeah. I actually had a crackback on a toss play, and I was supposed to block Ray Lewis, and that didn't work out well at all. I think I was just a speed bump for him to go make the tackle. That was about it. but he was different. I played against some pretty good corners. I mean, Revis in his prime, obviously really good. Cromartie, really good. But I think the best, in my opinion, was Pat P. He was one of the best, just athletic wise, and being able to, I guess, play in space with no help, and him just be like, it doesn't matter, you're not getting the ball. He had that ability. I think, and I've said it to a few people before, but Pat P, in my opinion, was the best DB that I went against in my career in the NFL for sure.
Dude, he was legit, man. His prime was something else.
Yeah, he was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple more questions for you, man, and then we can wrap up. One of them, especially with where you're currently at now, obviously we kind of been talking about your past this whole time, but currently Austin Pettis, you're a high school football coach. And if you had one message for the younger generation of high schoolers and even kids going into college, what's one piece of advice you would give them?
Yes, 100%. Hey, do what everybody else is not doing. And in terms of, I'm a huge Kobe Bryant fan, like, enjoy the hard things, because a lot of people fold when stuff gets hard. But if you can make that your superpower of, I actually am getting better when stuff gets hard for everybody, like, that would be my best advice. Cause that's, I played the mental game when we had conditioning, and it was super hard and people are throwing up and all that. The mental test for me was like, you're not going to break me. And I think that is something that a lot of kids are missing nowadays, because there's so much of glitz and glamour and did you make a one-handed catch and all that, and they don't fall in love with actually the real process that goes in to actually being great. So I think that would be the best advice I can give, is fall in love with the things that people don't love to do. And once you do that, you get the upper leg on everybody else.
Last question, Austin. Boise State currently, with what you've been seeing, they're with, you know, head coach Spencer Danielson, with what we got now, with the whole landscape of NIL, what are you liking with Boise State this upcoming season? Just one message for Bronco Nation. What are you liking so far out of the 2026 Boise State Broncos?
Yes, I mean, I think that you got the right person leading the program. I had a couple conversations with him over the last couple years. Not too crazy, but just him coming down and recruiting the schools that I was coaching at. But he has the right mentality in terms of getting Boise to the level that we were fortunate enough to be at when we were playing there in the Kellen Moore area, I guess, or era, I guess we can call it that. He has the right mentality of getting the right people. And I think that that's big, because fortunately for us, with that class that we had come in, everybody had their own different story of why they went to Boise. But that was the coaches realizing the potential in kids. And it wasn't just about, let's go get as many 5 stars as we can get or 4 stars. It was about, let's get the right people. And I think coach has a great knack for that, of getting the right people. And as long as you get the right people that aren't scared of competition and ready to leave if they have a bad practice and transfer and all that, and they actually, again, fall in love with the process, because I know he has a process that he wants guys that come in. It's not about being your best self year one, year two, year three, right? It's about gradually getting better so that you're ready for the NFL by the time you're done playing in college. So I think that getting the right kids that can see that vision will help the program continue to rise. And I think that they'll be on their way, especially now that he's got a good few years under his belt, of getting those guys with the right feel. And then now, you know, when guys come in, they can see the older guys that have adopted that mentality of him as well. And that's how you create a culture. So I think he's doing a great job of creating a culture. You're not going to win every single year. I know Boise is expecting maybe a one loss year. That was kind of the standard for a little while. But getting back to that, I think he's doing things the right way and not cutting corners. And that lasts longer than just going and trying to get a bunch of transfers that can start for us right now, or you actually go get guys who are going to learn and build through the process and understand the Bronco way, and then they bleed blue. And that's how you win ball games.
Well said. And that is so true, especially with the NIL era now. Everyone's kind of out for, you know, oh, how much are you going to pay me? How much, you know, what's it looking like there? But, you know, if you just go get guys that love the process, love the game, that's what it's all about. And that's what we, that's kind of always how we've been.
Yeah.
Keep that formula.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be the guy who has the most touchdowns or the most interceptions or the most sacks. It's the guy who's going to go hard every single play, be receptive to coaching, and understands that it's about team. It's about we, not me. And if you get a bunch of guys like that, you got 11 on the field that think that way, you're going to be all right.
I love it, man. Austin Pettis, I think it's time. I appreciate you. Seriously, you were awesome. Again, thank you, man. Seriously, so much. You were awesome. You're a natural, by the way. You're really good in front of the camera on the mic.
I appreciate it. I don't try, but hopefully, I mean, it's not hard to talk football. You know?
There you go. Yeah, okay. A little ball knower. Well, awesome, folks. It's episode 167. Thank you again to Austin Pettis. And again, if you haven't, hit us with a subscribe, show us some love so we can keep doing this. And we will see y'all for episode 168. Until next time.